This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can. Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck? Was that
Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big buzz play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Well, let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be a Nation. Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your host, Justin Zerk. We're reaching live here on this Monday evening. And Scott, fall is in the air. Football is here. Baseball getting close to the playoffs. You can smell the napalm coming over from the Cape Bronze house. It is all upon us here. The fall weather. Humidity has broke. Although I think it's supposed to be pretty warm the next few days. But anyway, regardless, we are here tonight inside the Vintage Vault as always. And let me bring in my PSC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
I'm well, JR. Good evening. And good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 382 of The Mothership. Saturday and Sunday were warm. Yesterday wasn't too bad. Actually, yesterday was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Saturday was a little warm. And today, this morning, was this is the first time I've worn a long sleeve shirt to work in like 3 months.
No, look but, at you.
But it's supposed to get a little warm again this week, and then we get into full-blown fall.
I'll show you a full-blown fall.
You're supposed to have the night off. I'm giving you the night off. Your weekend, you were having a little Greek food this weekend, correct?
You know my weekend's better than I do. I couldn't even tell you what I did. Then I come on
well,
here and...
You document them on Facebook. That's so
right. It's a good thing because I forget. They move so quickly. Yes, yeah. We had a Greek festival Friday night. It was delicious as always. I made sure I did some damage, so that was fun. And, of course, I met Richard Jenkins, the actor from Step Brothers and Hall Pass and 6 Feet Under and a few other shows as well. So he was a nice guy. Let us chat with him on and off as we waited in the 45-minute line to get the food. But Jesus. Well worth it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long line. And that was actually, we got there and it got even longer after. But it's worth it. It's worth the wait.
Yeah.
At a year.
And then, of course, week one of the National Football League season in earnest.
Yes.
Little Al did not have to chuck his onesie, huh?
No, he's never seen a Jets loss. He can...
can end it now.
End it now and be happy.
Don't show me anything ever again.
That's it. No, it was good. He was good. Me and Mr. Flanagan had some boneheads. We rang in week one right.
I believe the adjective you said to me, PIC, was absurd.
It was an absurdly disgusting amount of boneheads for three people, for him, myself, and my wife. And Juliana picked a little bit of stuff, I guess, but I don't know if it counts.
No boneheads order is ever absurd.
it was a lot. We got two burgers of the month to split between the three of us, and then a half tray of wings. And I didn't know Andy had like a side piece of bone-in wings going on. Apparently, I found out about after, so it was a shit show. But it was delicious as always.
By the way, let's say because we weren't on last. Congrats to Matt and the guys at Boneheads for some epic awards at last weekend's Wing Fest up in Buffalo.
Yeah, took home some hardware. I think it was most creative, or They basically won the best wing award, whatever the equivalent of that is there, and they won a couple other ones as well. So as always, very successful, and now they go to their seven-day schedule with it being football season, so they're back open Monday nights now for a while. So
nice.
Stop in if you're around.
Yes, definitely. Now, I believe the flavor they won with was something called Eye of the Tiger.
Yep.
Gives you a jolt, if you will. Have you tried it?
No.
No? We'll have to try it out. We'll have to try it maybe that weekend. Anyway, I'm glad you had a nice weekend, JR. And, of course, you'll hear much about week one of the NFL season a little bit later on in the week on our next episode of the Sports Evolution.
Let's talk about how much Sam Bradford and the Eagles blow.
Thank God. Sorry, Brad. Big upsets.
It should swap Ryan Reynolds in. They kind of look alike.
Let's do a little headlines quickie before we move on. Thoughts on the Rams, huh? Big win Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think that was completely unexpected. In one of the Survivor things I do, the Cowboys in it as well, and he was all in on the Seahawks. I thought that was a mistake. The Rams play them pretty well whenever they play, especially in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
The Seahawks, though, gave it away a little bit late. Although I do like the onside kick attempt because I guess what the rule is if the Rams had touched it and the Seahawks recovered, that counts as a possession for them. So the Seahawks could have then won with a field goal. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think that's why he tried it.
Interesting.
That's sneaky cool, if it's true.
Yeah.
But from what I understood, that was the rule there. So that was neat. Yeah, but no, it was an upset. I mean, the Seahawks, I think, will still be good. I don't think that's an indication. But I do believe as long as Carson Palmer stays healthy, the Cardinals are also going to be pretty good again. So that division is going to be looking like a three-team race.
Yes, absolutely. And the Niners playing a little bit later this evening out on the coast against the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Cowboys come from behind. Can't understand how. I mean, they tried every possible way to give that game away Sunday night.
That was a giant mess on both ends.
Yeah, it was not a really great 60 minutes of football. Well, except
Giants,
for that last drive.
Even if they did win, they wouldn't have really deserved that win.
No, they didn't.
They played like shit. But literally one of the worst managed games I've ever seen across the board. There were multiple spots.
Yeah,
and that were just brutally effed up.
Yeah, and the efficiency was bad.
Yeah, but it started with Eli not milking the clock when they had that clock screw up where the referee had to explain it like for 19 minutes what was going on.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, definitely.
And then he snaps it with like 17 seconds left instead of running it down.
Mm.
And, of course, the Cowboys end up winning with 7 seconds left, so that doesn't help.
Right.
It was just a mess. And then at the end, of course, I mean, if you want to throw on third down, fine, I guess, but how do you throw it out of the end zone and not take the sack there and let the clock run down?
Right.
And now there's word that they told Jennings not to score or something like that. I don't know. The whole thing is a real mess.
Not pretty. Well, at least for them anyway. But yeah, J-E-T-S, Jets. What do you think of the Browns unis? Pretty hideous, huh?
As bad as them.
Yes. I was so looking forward because I kind of always liked the Browns as a kid. I always liked their colors. And I like the brown face mask with a helmet, but those pants are absolutely horrendous. But anyway, Jets are 1-0. Buffalo with big win. That shock you?
Yeah, I didn't expect them to kind of beat them down like they did. That surprised me. But the fact that the Colts may not be as good as we thought, and I know this comes on the heels of me saying they may go to the Super Bowl on the Kevin Kelly Show, but I was caught off guard. I didn't really prepare. I don't know. They kind of have all the makings of a team that maybe underachieves.
Mm-hmm.
They're soft on D, a coach that's kind of on the hot seat. Maybe a little lame duck. They don't want to sign him to an extension. There's a lot with there to me that are red flags. But they do have a pretty soft schedule. They do have a soft division, so that should keep them afloat. But I don't know. Something to watch. We'll see. But yeah, Buffalo good. We'll see if it's a mirage or if it's just early Rex fire or not.
Talked to a few Patriot fans today, including the lumpy yard gnome. And they're a little. I don't say nervous, but they're paying attention this Sunday. I think Sexy Rexy is going to go out there and, freak them out a little bit. I don't know if they'll win. But historically, even bad Bills teams usually beat really, really good Pats teams early in the season. And then when they kind of right the ship and they're pretty good late, they usually crush the Bills late in the season. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, plenty of football talk later this week on our next episode of the Sports Evolution. But tonight, there is no evolution because this is a blue brand show, not a red brand show. And tonight, inside the Vintage Vault.
Hey, what
Sorry. I know back to school, but you can go over to your corner. We bring you the Steel City Lockdown. That is No Way Out 2005.
Of Texas. Part 10.
Yeah, we wish. Yeah, you know, JR, we've talked the last few years about, you know, how to categorize the February pay-per-view, whether it's has it become a holdover, you know, does it have any, you know, significance to it? And some years it goes up and down. Last year's No Way Out was historically epic out in San Francisco. This one, maybe not so much. But we'll dive in. February 20th, 2005. Live from the Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Your boy's hometown. And I believe the last time we were here on pay-per-view, I'm sure there's plenty of Raws and SmackDowns, that'll get corrected too. Unforgiven 01?
Yeah, I can't think of anything since.
No, I don't think so either. Another big moment for your boy that night. Mm-hmm. Will he have one on this night? We'll see. We've been here, so we don't need history. Your attendance, 9,500 even. Your buy rate, 0.28, which is really not that great. It's actually pretty dreadful. And your announcers at ringside, Michael Cole and Taz. Give us our Sutton report.
Okay. Do you remember the song for the show?
I do know it was Mr. Jericho's beloved Fozzy, but I don't remember the song.
Enemy by Fozzy. And the video for Enemy was actually banned after one showing on MTV's Headbangers Ball. Due to the controversial nature of the video, it showed a disabled man forced to climb stairs to a rooftop and commit suicide. What the hell, Jericho? I don't know.
Jesus.
A weird
Jesus,
spot
Jericho.
In 05, I guess. Championship roll call. WWE champion still JBL. United States champion still John Cena. Tag team champion still Basham Brothers. Cruiserweight still Sho Funaki. So no title changes since the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. We had a release since the Rumble. The lovely Amy Weber left the promotion after complaining of hazing from the wrestlers, reported
what?
To be, have been her friend, JBL, and Randy Orton.
What?
So, yeah, I remember that. She was complaining about her treatment. But anyway, I liked her as part of the cabinet. It was kinda
me too.
Sad to see her go. TV by the numbers. SmackDown averaged 288 episodes. Velocity 144. TNA Impact 38. On February 4th and 5th, the WWE taped episodes of Raw and SmackDown from the Super Arena in Saitama, Japan. 213 TNA presented against all odds. Promotion of Ring of Honor celebrated its third anniversary over three nights in February as well in Chicago Ridge, Illinois. No Way Out Heat, Charlie Haas and Hardcore Holly defeated Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree. And we have some tournament action that we'll talk about a little bit later as well.
Yes. And quick little check here. Against All Odds 2005, the main event was a Battle of Young Lions. Jeff Jarrett and Kevin Nash.
Jesus.
For the NWA title. Although I think there was pretty epic AJ Daniels 30-minute Iron Man for the X Division title. So I'm sure that was a pretty good match. America's Most Wanted beat Kid Cash and Lance Hoyt for the tag team titles. And Abyss beat Jeff Hardy in a Full Metal Mayhem match to determine the number one contender for the NWA world title. So that was Against All Odds 05, of course, from the Impact Zone with an epic crowd of 775.
A real thriller.
Yep, in Manila. All right.
I believe that's where Michael Jackson got the song from.
Against All Odds?
No, Thriller.
Oh, Thriller?
Phil Collins got Against All Odds.
Yes, that's right. Okay. All right.
And Chris Jericho made a handicapped man commit suicide by jumping off a building on TV.
Oh, God. What's wrong with Jericho? That's the weirdest
I'm
thing
real
ever
mad
happened.
At Triple H, guys. Let's make this guy kill himself.
Yeah.
No legs.
Let's give him a long blonde hair and a funny mustache.
Let's make right. Lieutenant Dan jump off the building.
Lieutenant Dan. All right. We dive in with our first JR.
Lieutenant Dan showed up and climbed up these stairs.
We open. Did you like that movie?
Forrest Gump? Yeah, it was
yes.
right.
Okay.
It's good.
Just wanted to...
Cutting-edge talk here.
I don't know.
What do you think of that OJ thing?
Did you have a ham sandwich from Subway? Or?
The OJ thing was crazy.
What'd you have at Subway? I had a ham and cheese sandwich.
I can't believe this baseball strike's going to cancel the World Series.
What'd you think of that hot new Air Supply album? Okay. So,
let me ask you, did you like The Godfather?
So did you go to Primanti Brothers in Pittsburgh? Okay. Our first of three title matches this evening. Open the show, JR.
Just get whipped by Shaniqua and head on home to you.
Yes. All right. So, our first match, title match, the Blue Belts, the WWE Tag Team Championships, are champions, and they have been champions, are the Bashams, Duck and Danny. How do we get to this point, JR, and give us a little history leading up to this title match?
Well, Carrie comes in the house, and then in early January, RVD injured his knee. On January 13th, RVD and Ray were forced to drop the tag titles to the Bashams. And then Spencer came in, and he said, Ma, RVD injured his knee in the process. RVD would undergo surgery, and Arthur came out on January 27th and said he would not return until early 2006. And then Doug's boss comes in. He's all pissed off because Doug was late for his job at IPS. And in late 04, Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio began a friendly rivalry. And Holly came to walk the dog when the rivalry began with two straight Mysterio wins. It's 2005 dawned, but on January 13th, when Deacon and his wife were separating and Major had nowhere to stay, Rey and RVD were defending their tag titles in a four-way match, and Rey once again pinned Eddie to eliminate him and Booker T. On February 17th, Ray announced that he found a new tag partner to replace RVD, and that was Carrie's boss at the law firm, Mr. Prevel or Purcell, whatever his name was, Eddie Guerrero. He then went on to defeat Doug in a singles match, and Danny was left upset at IPS as always. Just cash my check and drive right home to you. And then Ray Romano made a guest appearance. This is the final appearance for the Basham Brothers on pay-per-view. They remained part of JBL's cabinet until June when they quit and got into the sitcom biz and claimed they were tired of the lack of respect they were receiving. They would both bounce around TV and Ohio Valley until January 07 when they both released outright. They would be given a brief run in TNA before moving to Puerto Rico where they continued to compete on the indie scene as of when we wrote this thing.
Yeah, I'm probably still putzing around. They never came back, huh?
Never came back.
No rumors of them returning?
It's like King
I thought one of them came back. Maybe not.
It's over. Let it go, man. It was a good show. Had its run.
It was a great show. Indeed.
So Basham's the champs, like we mentioned, part of the cabinet. I thought it was cool teaming Ray and Eddie with RVD down. Gives some direction to Eddie. They get off to a fast start. Quick tagging. Eddie gets caught in the corner and worked over. Hits a German on Danny to break a chokehold. The Bashams cut the ring well. Crowd rallies Eddie, makes a hot tag. Ray comes in and grabs an air falls on Doug. Bashams use the shifty switch in place of a tag and take advantage of twin magic, as I like to call it. I just made that up right now. Danny works full Nelson and then reverses a bear hug to grind down Ray. Bashams are pretty solid in control here, have definitely improved, I thought, over the last year. Did you feel the same way?
Yes. Yeah,
like
I definitely.
If you compare their match in February 04 with was it Rikishi and Scotty, was that when they fought them?
Yeah.
They definitely look just more cohesive at this point.
Well, you're also, if you're comparing this match to this match,
obviously better opponents.
Dealing better opponents. But, and I think Shaniqua, I think they leaned on her too for kind of extra heat. And now, I mean, yeah, they're in the cabinet, but they're not out there. It's not like Orlando and JBL are out there. So it's, they've definitely improved as a team.
Ray lands a nice moonsault for an air fall. We get a nice double team reverse powerbomb by the Bashams, but Eddie makes a save. Ray wriggles free and makes a tag. Eddie comes in, cleans house with drop kicks as the crowd starts to get hot. Eddie uses some sneaky trickery to fake a missing a frog splash, but gets rolled up for a near fall, or getting rolled up for a near fall. Eddie gets the ref distracted, uses the title as a weapon, and then steals the win in the straps. I thought the match was fine. It was all there to build to Eddie cheating to win at the end. Again, an okay opener. Nothing that stood out, and I liked the choice to put the titles on Eddie and Ray. The Basham's got the cabinet thing going on either way. They're not really going anywhere at this point. And Eddie and Ray kind of have a story to tell that we can talk about moving forward. And I think the belts add to that.
I thought it was a really fun match.
Yeah.
Ray and Eddie worked very well together. I thought it was a good pick here. Eddie had nothing to do anyway. And I think they were looking ahead to other things later in the year with the two of them. So I think that fit anyway. It was a fun match. I enjoyed it. Good length, a little under 15 minutes. So good opener. And crowd was hot. They wouldn't be hot all night. Pittsburgh's usually a great wrestling crowd. But they were good for this match. They would be up and down the rest of the show, though. But, yeah, no, this is a fun match. And, you're talking about two guys The only thing I would ask is about the cruiserweight division, and we'll get more into that when that match comes up in a little bit, about Rey not being in it, and does it take away from the cruiser division, or has Rey kind of graduated from the cruiser division?
I think he's graduated unless he's wrestling someone that's on his level. I think he's just past that. And having him in the tag feud for a while now at the end of 04 into 05, I think you had some quality cruiserweights. They didn't really need him anymore. We could talk about that match. But, no, I liked Rey here. I think we even mentioned that back at Armageddon. Like, I like him here. I think he's really added a lot to the tag division. I liked the team with him and RVD, so I was kind of sad to see RVD get hurt. But I kind of like where they headed with him and Eddie. So I was fine here with them winning. And yeah, normally I'm kind of against the team getting thrown together and beating the real team, but the Bashams were, they weren't going anywhere. And the cabinet was giving them more screen time than the belts anyway. So
true.
They have what they need to continue to be on TV.
Okay. I mean, it jacked the crowd up. And then the win was hilarious because you don't see Rey usually acting that way, lying and cheating and stealing, but his boy kind of coerced him to.
Yeah, Eddie pretty much hit his playbook at the end there with all of those.
Yeah, yep. So there you go. Eddie and Rey, your new WWE Tag Team Champions. Not really an upset, but a good fun combo. And again, I don't think the cabinet didn't really need the belts anyway. So
being in the cabinet.
Being in the cabinet. All right.
I don't know where the hell I pulled that out from. Oh, it was the cupboard. Was it Indian in the cupboard? I thought it was Indian in the cupboard. Not Indian in the cabinet.
Speaking of cupboards and cabinets.
Indian in the draw.
Yeah. In the draw, Cole. I don't know. Hey, French Tickler. No, he wasn't on the show. We have a competition kind of bobbing and weaving in and out of.
Before that, we go backstage where Carlito.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
As Carlito. Matt Rotella would say, Carlito.
Carlito.
Still working to get Teddy Long fired, cozying up to everyone. Tells Teddy that if he can't get Batista to sign to SmackDown, he may lose his job. So he's kind of teasing him up.
Yep. He brings in the board of directors' wife.
Yes. Cozying up to them.
Weird. Yeah,
now
that was very
our competition.
Very strange. Carlito.
Carlito.
Carlito. Should have.
Ricky Carlito. Should
of. Yes.
All right, so we head back to the ring. This is the competition you had mentioned. Tori Wilson, Dawn Marie come out as judges for the Rookie Diva competition because this is just what we needed to kill some time.
Yeah, precisely.
I will say both were looking quite fetching, especially Tori, who I think that green dress may be the best thing she's worn.
Yes.
Like, outside of, like, lingerie and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as far as actual clothing, I think it's the best she's looked dressed-wise since we started doing this. She looked phenomenal.
Yeah, she was hot.
I did not think this was needed, though. Coming off the Diva Search and Tough Enough and everything else, like, do we need another competition? First round is an evening gown competition. I thought Joy was looking pretty good. And of course, she's my favorite is they had the credentials,
incredible.
The graphic.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Special friend of the Big Show.
Special friend of Big Show.
That was her credential for being in this tournament.
She was looking absolutely incredible. Like, the dress.
The dress was okay. We'll talk more about how she looked going forward. Mm-hmm. I thought she looked serviceable in the dress. I thought they all looked pretty good. But
I like, she was walking with the dress, and then Dawn Marie's like, yeah, she's all right. And then, she turns around, and, like, the back starts, like, right above the crack of her ass. So it was like, well, okay, there's half a dress.
You don't get to be Big Show special friend by now. Exactly. Giving it up. Rochelle is a former model. I thought Lauren was looking pretty good. And, of course, Michelle McCool, fitness trainer.
Totally forgot about the two of them, Lauren Jones and the other one.
Easy to forget. Tori and Dawn were catty on commentary, and I thought this whole thing just summed up this era of divas where, especially on SmackDown, there's no, like, it was all just about, like, this kind of shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, nothing in ring. It was all just about this goofiness. So voting was now open, and just a complete waste of time. I mean, yes, they're hot, but it could have been done without multiple segments across the show.
Yeah, precisely. And the awkwardness of Dawn Marie and Tori together after the whole ridiculous feud.
And they had, like, a couple of okay, like, digs, but I don't know. The whole thing was just weird.
It was really weird and unnecessary. But Joy was looking – she looked amazing. All right. Our next match, these two guys look nothing like any of them. And this was probably, like, a kind of a slap together.
And after we take Lex Luger in the chair, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga.
I don't think so, brother. You're not getting my girl.
You dumb. and don't you call me that. You're not gonna get Lex Luger in the John.
You're not gonna get my daughter.
All right. So of course you're talking about Booker Man himself, not Kevin Sullivan, but Booker T.
I'll see you in the Silver Dome, brother.
Taking on a guy who's now, I don't want to say officially floating aimlessly, but you know, after losing a huge feud, he kind of had a direction for him. But how do we get to this point, JR, between Booker and the crazy
Heidenreich?
Heidenreich. I loved Heyman singing. It was pretty awesome.
It was.
Because then, like, in between when he does the Heidenreich, like that really slimy Heyman way of saying things.
So. On 217, an angry Booker was storming backstage, and he booked Booker to storm backstage as well. After losing to John Cena in the WWE title contender semifinal match, he passed by Heidenreich, who was sitting and writing poetry, like Mark Clare. Heidenreich laughed at Booker for losing to Cena, and an angry Booker ripped on Heidenreich's fear of caskets as well as his whole shtick. Booker then said he didn't have time for Heidenreich and walked off. And they added the match to the pay-per-view card, and Scott, this one... like last one, tickled my fancy a little bit. I kind of enjoyed
really?
This one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll talk about it.
Okay.
Heidenreich reads his poem, and I like the sensitive, crazy man. I thought it was a cool little gimmick for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Heidenreich because he's trying, right? So
yes.
You throw him out there. He's obviously not the most athletic guy. He's obviously not the best wrestler, whatever. But he's out there, and he's working hard to create a character that makes himself stand out instead of just being generic big man. And he's diving into it a whole hog, you know, jumping in. Doing whatever he can to make it get over, working hard in the ring. We know he held up his end of the bargain with The Undertaker. We talked about that. So I liked him. I liked his effort here. Booker's still doing his thing. Heidenreich uses kind of a boxing offense, which I thought was unique. He had really good energy and presence. He keeps moving forward, even if he's kind of clunky and tripping all over the place. He never stops. Booker turns the table on the floor, runs Heidenreich into the steps. Heidenreich shakes off a Booker sidekick, slams him hard to the mat, followed by a stiff clothesline. Heidenreich cuts off Booker's comeback with a nice boot to the face, works the arm with a submission, but never stops yelling or moving, which I liked. Mm-hmm. Booker makes a basic comeback, and the crowd is pretty much gassed on this. Doesn't really care at all. Heidenreich avoids a scissor kick and bookend, elbows out of that. Then he hits a sloppy charge and spills out to the floor. Heidenreich gets frustrated, smashes a chair into the throat of Booker for the DQ. And I was actually fine with that finish because I feel like they were heading somewhere with Heidenreich, and they don't want to have him take another loss. And Booker, you know what, I'm a job here at Heidenreich. So.
Right.
I was okay with it. It was a throwaway match. Heidenreich has really won me over. He can be sloppy and off, but like I said, he's worked hard. He's always moving. He jaws with the crowd. He's got a character. He's a perfect mid-card heel. Like, he's mm-hmm. fine in this spot. The match was fine. The crowd checked out, but I thought Heidenreich worked really hard. Booker led him through the match. And look, do I want to go back and rewatch this one tonight? No, but I mean, I didn't hate it when I was watching it. It was better than I expected it to be when it first came up. So kudos to Heidenreich for never really thrown in the towel and keep working hard.
Yeah, I agree with you about Heidenreich's character. I mean, he's trying hard. He's getting, you know, he's on the right show for his character, because on SmackDown you kind of have, you know, they have a little more room for character development than they do on Raw. So it was fine. And, you know, Booker's Booker. And it was okay. It was, you know, bookmark match in the fill. It's kind of the sad thing with some of these, whenever there's a February pay-per-view, is you do have some slot fillers, and this is pretty much a slot filler. But, you know, just slightly under 7 minutes, so nothing, you know, wasn't chewing up too much time on the show. I mean, I guess I don't want to say I disagree with you, because I do agree with you that the filler, you know, the filler diva stuff is a waste. But sadly, if that wasn't there, then this match probably would have been like another 5 minutes, which we probably didn't want. So
I don't care. I'd rather watch Heidenreich bust his ass for another 5 minutes and stomp around the ring reading poetry than watch. Well, we'll talk about dope ass Rochelle. She was doing later on.
Yeah, that's true.
At least Heidenreich gets it. At least he's got some presence.
I mean, the
divas that they have out there. I mean, Michelle was kind of getting it, and Joy was fine, but Rochelle and Lauren were lost. I mean,
just
don't get it at all. I mean, they were like. It's like they were giving free shots away at a bar and like trying to entice the crowd. Like, that's what they were doing. Like, that was their level of going out there and performing.
That's right.
Like, you know.
It's not like that.
Like, no. They're not just going to like go crazy because you yell, yeah, and turn around in a circle. Like, that's not going to get them fired.
Wave your boobs. Yeah, pretty much. Like, but the match was fine. Nothing ridiculous. And I agree with you about, Heidenreich. He worked really hard. What do you think about Booker's status at the moment, though? Like, even on SmackDown,
yeah.
Does he seem like he's just, like, there? Like, for a guy who still has decent cachet.
But he had his run with JBL. So it's not like he's been mired in this. You know what I mean? Like, all through 2004, he had the stuff with Cena, which is pretty good. So it's hard to say too much that, like, he's... It's like he's been hosed and has had no chance, basically. He had a pretty good push throughout 04, and I think they just try to figure out how to recalibrate him now. And it takes a little bit longer to get there. But, like, yeah, it's a weird spot, but, you know, the alternative is not being on the card like some of the guys, so it's probably fine.
Right.
Keeps him busy for a month. I think the bigger, more egregious thing will be when we get to Mania.
Yes. Yeah. In that instance, yes, I agree with you on that. So there you go. Booker T wins by disqualification when Heidenreich uses a steel chair. But I, you know, even at this point, I almost feel like, you know, a face turn could be in the works too. So maybe. I think people are going to start to warm up to him.
Heidenreich. So we go backstage where a random group of faces is trying to pump up Cena for his match. Eddie Guerrero comes in and gives him a pep talk about the importance of main eventing WrestleMania. He gives tips on beating Angle. And the key, he says, is to frustrate him by not tapping out no matter what. I like the segment here. I thought having Eddie laid some credence to it, kind of harkened back to WrestleMania 20.
Yes, I was about to say the same thing.
When he's pumping up Benoit before their match. Yep. So yeah, I thought this was really well done. I liked it. Nice little. See, this is the Time Killers I'm cool with.
Yes, and I feel like that pep talk was almost exactly the same when he gave Benoit.
yeah, pretty much. It was pretty close to it. I thought it made a lot of sense because Eddie spent most of 04 feuding with Angle, so he knows him well. So I thought it was cool. I thought it was well done. I like when the faces work together to take out the heels.
Yes, I agree. And more about Cena later on. Next, our second title match of the evening. It's a match I alluded to a little bit earlier, and that is the Cruiserweight.
Scaluted.
The Cruiserweight Championship on the line right now. Your champion, as JR mentioned, is still Sho Funaki, SmackDown's number one. Announcer with his awesome SmackDown tights, which I always thought were cool. But this is they called it like a gauntlet open. I don't even think they called it a gauntlet. It's like an open elimination match.
So confusing.
Whatever fucking mess they were making it out of. It was a myriad of cruiserweights in one match. It was Funaki, your champion. Paul London, complete with his weird.
I like how your Funaki is basically like Splinter from the Ninja Turtles cartoon.
Paul London wearing his weird fur coat or whatever that was. Shannon Moore, who I still forget sometimes was in the company.
Yes.
She saw him like once every 8 months or something. Akio and the perpetual bloated cruiserweight Chavo Guerrero. Good grief. Oh, and Spike Dudley, your former cruiserweight champion. Chavo looked, well, I'll talk about that when I get to my comments, but so how did we get to this point? Why did we have all these cruisers slapped together in one match?
The match was announced on 2/17. That night, Funaki, London, and Moore had taken on Guerrero, Akio, and Spike in a six-man, and Funaki pinned Spike to win the bout. This is Spike Dudley's final pay-per-view match. After the show, Spike hung around until June, making his final appearance at One Night Stand in June. He would be released on July 5th and head to TNA. He would leave TNA in 2007 and return to the indie scene, where he continues to compete on and off, in addition to, I believe, his real estate. His final pay-per-view record is 7-8, losing in his first 5 pay-per-view appearances. So, had a strong finish.
He left TNA in 2007 after Matt Rotella dumped coffee on him at a house show at the Twin River Casino when he was knocking women over, knocking old ladies' canes over to get to the parking lot. Watching him walk fast is a moment of equilibrium.
Wobbling yes. Fast.
I think the greatest JR line of 2015 is when which one's in the crutches? Bushwhacker Butcher said Book Butcher or Luke? Which one's in the crutches? Butch?
Huh?
Which Bushwhacker's yes, came Butch, out of Hall of Fame on the crutches?
We saw Luke at Ring of Honor, so it was not him.
No, at the Hall of Fame when they came off of the Hall
of
Fame.
I know, but I'm saying that by process of elimination, Luke wrestled at a show you went to.
Yeah, that is true. I never get those two guys. Yeah. I never get those two names.
It's clearly to me, not him.
To me, they're both are the same. But when you said he said he was walking to the ring like Maritella. And then he walks that way without crutches.
He definitely does. Spike either does real estate or he does like.
I thought he was a teacher.
He used to be, but he doesn't. He does something. He does like wealth management or something, or like whatever, something like that. He's always talking about like saving money and shit on Facebook or whatever.
Wonder if he still has the cool goatee and has Boss on his
own. He was around here somewhere. I know that.
Yes. Isn't that where he taught in Rhode Island too. So he must have been where he's from. Yeah.
Convoluted rules.
Yeah. I don't know. We wrote gauntlet on our original review on the
board. It was kind of a gauntlet. because
yeah,
one
but
at a time.
Well, no, I know, but then the like wiki said open elimination. I don't know what the fuck Cole called it. It was like six different names.
Yeah, well, they couldn't tag in. It was one after the other. But they're yeah. all standing on the apron. It was almost right. like an elimination chamber without the chamber. That's kind of what it was. Oh, no, yes. Well, no, because they all came. I don't know. It was stupid. It, yeah. The way they explained it is very convoluted. So Paul London's out first. I thought he's cultivating himself a unique look and style, kind of like Heinrich, building himself a little character. Mm-hmm. Chavo comes out second, still the same and completely played out. Like you said, is gassed to the gills.
Oh, my God. He's so bloated.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. When Chavo looks bloated, I mean, Ray looked bad. We didn't mention that both Ray and Eddie looked ridiculous in the first match, but yeah. Chavo here looks like it's not even him. Ridiculous.
No. Juiced. Shannon Moore made his way out third with his lame punk gimmick, just looking like a goof going nowhere. Yeah. Spike was still the boss, and he wears a Patriots jersey to troll. Of course, they had just beaten the Steelers in the championship. Is it AFC championship game that year? Or the playoffs,
yep.
right?
Yep,
AFC championship. And them. Akio, who Cole calls a dark horse, gets zero reaction, and Funaki, still champ, gets a nice welcome. He starts things off with London, meaning Funaki will have to run the table if he wants to retain. I like that little part of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Good back and forth. Funaki looking kind of crisp until Spike smacks him from behind. London eliminates him, guaranteeing us a new champion. Funaki lingers, wipes out Spike, and London eliminates him right away, and I thought that was a sad ending for Spike as the boss character. Deserved better here. I thought he should have kept the title to Mania, looking at what they did since he lost
right.
at Armageddon. I think he would have been better served to maybe just have a big blow-off at Mania, losing to someone.
Right.
And putting that away. Moore comes in next. We're working at a very fast pace. Moore dominates, works a sternum and upper body, misses a moonsault. London hits a perfect 450 to send him packing. London, I thought, was looking really good. Akio mows him down the clothesline, takes his time, works the arm, hits some snug chops. London wins a battle on top by hitting a super neck breaker and have some nice chemistry between those two there. Akio can't beat the count, so London gets up at the last second. Akio's eliminated. Chavo comes in and measures London and attacks the knee. Chavo's sloppy and cocky until London steals a near fall. Chavo gets more focused and aggressive. London gets a nice near fall on a full Nelson suplex, and the crowd is just completely dead as London rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad because he's been great.
Right.
And a nice underdog story in the match. London gets to fire a comeback. He can't finish. Chavo uses the tights and steals the win and the title. Blah decision. I thought it was awful to go back to Chavo again. Completely just played out. London, I thought, should have won. He was clearly the best. He looked head and shoulders above everyone except for maybe Akio. Mm. Chavo steals another win. The match was fine. The crowd was just not into it at all. And I thought the whole thing, to me, while the match was there and not bad, was just a snapshot of that they could have been doing so much more with this division. I know that's something we've maligned for quite a while now
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the Cruiserweights, but I think it's glaring here where they still have some talent that just, and they're using it, but they're not showcasing it. Like, why not have London and Funaki just have a 15-minute match here and have London win the title and then go on to feud with Akio? You know, instead of just throwing this multi-man match after multi-man match, just been annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could tell. That's why I had mentioned Ray earlier in the show. The division is just so bad.
See, I think
right
Ray
now.
Would have made this thing worse because he would have just lapped everyone. You know, it's like,
well, yeah.
He deserves better than this. You know, he doesn't deserve to be in this thing. I mean, it's Ray Mysterio. He could do more than just be stuck in this
True.
Mess of a multi-man cruiser cluster.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And I think the two guys, besides London, that I really thought deserved a better showing besides London were eliminated almost immediately, and that was Funaki and Spike. I mean, the right. your actual champion, you just kind of shat on the title by having your champion knocked out, like, you know, immediately. It's not the case like when Taz lost, was the first fall in that three-way with, you know, with Mike Awesome and Tanaka, you know, in ECW, and he was a oh my God, well, that was different. He was being eliminated.
Right.
He was leaving the company. But poor you know, Funaki to be knocked out immediately.
Well, I was okay with that. His whole run has been more than he probably should have had. So,
true.
You know, it's not that. It at least added some intrigue. At least you knew you were getting a new champ. And I liked it because I liked having London be the guy that ran the table because he's the one that's going to gain any kind of sympathy because he's the best. So at least have him be in there. It's just Chavo is so played out. Just, I mean, the 04 run was fine with Chavo Sr. had some moments, had his feud with Eddie, but it's like, just let someone new have it. Like, why does
right.
he have to even be around?
Right, and then Spike being eliminated in barely 2 minutes to a guy that like I agree with you. I mean, what was the point of him losing it? I mean, what was the we said it back at the Armageddon Vault None. You know, there was really no build for Funaki.
No, it was just to do a shock and like just a surprise that Funaki, the last guy you would expect, was the one that ended it. Like, to me, that's the only reason they even did it. Why not build London and make this a cruiserweight open to earn a title match at Mania, and you have London dethrone Spike on at Mania? Like, that would have been great.
That would have been a great match.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, very weird. Very convoluted.
Or, put the belt on Kidman. Like, where the hell is he? Put the belt on Kidman at Armageddon and build to a London Kidman blow off or London winning the belt from him. Like, why not do that? That was a hot feud in the fall.
You have a backstory, you know? And
sick of it.
Yeah. And Chavo's just, oh my God. Hey, Unk, can I borrow your meds? Yeah, sure. Why not?
He's just like,
oh my God.
Replacement level wrestler. Like, in baseball, is a replacement, like, doesn't do anything great. He's not bad. He doesn't excite you when your team has him, you know, starting shortstop or whatever.
Right.
You know, he's Brendan Ryan, you know? It's like he's going to do his job. He's going to do his job. He's technically good. He's going to have a great match here and there, make a, you know, flash some leather here and there, maybe hit a home run here and there. But are you excited when your team, signs Brendan Ryan to play second base for you? And I'm speaking as a guy whose team signed Brendan Ryan. To play second base. But you know what I mean? Like, that's what it is to me. Like, that's what Chavo is.
Did he shave the mustache?
Who knows? I don't know. that's one of...
never heard you act this way about the Yankees. So bizarre.
I don't get to watch him. I listen to him a lot, so I don't know.
Yeah.
He could have a Fu Manchu. He could have a...
I think he shaved Merkin. It.
I have
sure.
no clue what the hell is going on.
All right. So, in any event, Chavo Guerrero, bloated and all, is your new Cruiserweight champion. And Lord only knows why. So, to ramp the show up even more, JR, we have part two of our competition.
Fuck. All right. So, I feel like we haven't had a show like this in a while. And we had some down, rough, raw ones. But,
yeah.
I mean, this picks up a little bit late. But so, round two of the Diva Contest, addressed in random costumes for the talent show. Joyce talented erotic massage on Tori, looking very hot in her revealing outfit. Mm-hmm. Dawn bitches out Joy, and Tori makes a slut joke. Which I don't really notice the need for slut shaming by Tori here. Rochelle tries to fire up the crowd and is just brutal. And this is what I was talking about earlier. I'm like, Rochelle, what's your talent? Hey, everyone, I'm Rochelle. Okay, thanks. Like, what did she do? What the hell was her talent? Waving to the crowd?
She's a Playboy model. Her talent is laying around naked. So
she was telling jokes, I guess. Was that the thing? She told a lame joke? I don't know.
Yeah, she told stupid jokes. Your talent is laying around naked. That's what your talent is, and you really can't do it here.
Here's the joke, everyone. Chavo Guerrero won the last match and won the Cruiserweight title. That's my joke. Dawn just shits all over her as well. Just awful. I mean, I don't care how hot she was. Like, nothing could make her attractive after that brutal performance. And just, like, trying to egg on the crowd is awful. Lauren dances, strips, and then basically just does a stripper routine. Looks good, but I think even the cowboy would have walked away from this one at the club. Not the best dance, but okay.
I don't know. It all depends on what time of night it is.
I guess. Okay. No S day, but fine. She was okay, but basically did a striptease. I mean, that's effectively what she did, and they basically say it as well. Mm. And then Dawn shits all over her, and then Michelle's talent is to body slam Dawn to shut her up, and she almost slams her on the mic, like almost would have broken her back probably.
I know.
And that's the end of the talent portion. So just a complete waste of time, and I am all set with all of these for the rest of the night. So,
but yeah,
unfortunately, it's not it for the rest of the night. We get more.
It's not over. But I realize how much. While I was watching this, I do realize how much I miss Joy. Because Joy was pretty hot.
She was a joy.
She was quite a joy. All right, next up.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you feel bloated. Sometimes you're not.
Sometimes you feel like joy.
Sometimes you want some joy. Almond joy. All right, next up.
Sometimes you bust a nut. Sometimes you bog.
Yeah. Well, most of the guys in this roster probably could have busted a nut if they took anything else. all right.
Maybe the funniest thing you've said in about a year.
our next match is a guy who probably was on him and another guy who probably would have died if he was. How do we get to this point, JR, as the dead man takes on another big,
Luther Reigns.
Talentless oaf.
On 2-3 SmackDown, Undertaker was taking on Rene Dupree in the championship contender tournament, working on orders of the boss. Luther Reigns hit ringside, hooked Taker's leg as he was climbing into the ring, leading to a double countout, giving Kurt Angle a bye to the final. The next week, Luther bragged about his actions and his prison background, claiming he wasn't afraid of The Undertaker. Taker would come after him the next week, but Luther sacrificed Jindrak and took off for higher ground. On 217, Taker defeated Jindrak in a singles match. After the bout, Reigns grabbed a TV camera, nailed Taker in the head with it, and Luther left the ring, and Taker sat up and stared him down. And this is Luther Reigns' final pay-per-view appearance.
No.
He hung on TV for a while, eventually splitting off from Mark Jindrak, and they had a brief singles feud with The Big Show. Spent some time on Velocity, but clashed with Booker Paul Heyman. Eventually requested his release. It was granted in May, and Reigns would spend some time as a real estate agent, in addition to some TV and indie wrestling. In 2009, he suffered a stroke that attributed to steroid use that he started when he was a bouncer, mm-hmm. and later a wrestler, and had a painkiller addiction as well. So, tough run for Luther.
Luther.
Former Horseshoe. Following
That's right.
this run. So, interesting match here. Chance for Luther to establish himself as a player with a good performance against The Undertaker. Jindrak is backing up Luther Reigns, but still is too fired up, and the referee tosses him for getting too into the match before it even starts. Nearly a year after returning to the gimmick, Taker's hair has grown back out. He's feeling a little bit stronger mm-hmm. overall. Still has the leather pants look, though. Taker goes right at Luther, tossing blows, but Luther fires right back. Taker hits an old school and a DDT and goes to choke to a choke to wear him down. Luther removes the buckle pad, but backfires when Taker whips him into it. All Taker early, methodically stalking and pounding on Luther, dropping the leg on the edge of the apron. Reigns uses a ref distraction for a low blow, then rams Taker into the buckle. Luther works the back with a basic power offense, switches and works the leg randomly out of nowhere. Taker fights his way back into control. Luther gets clunky down the stretch, looks a bit lost, and gets sloppy. Taker hits a choke slam, but Luther blocks a tombstone with a swinging neck breaker for a near fall. Taker comes back with a DDT, and it's a tombstone for the win. I thought the match was fine early, but completely fell apart at the end. They didn't totally mesh, but worked hard and kept the pace up. Mm. Luther's psychology was completely spotty and all over the place. He's working the arm, then he's working the leg, and he's working the back. You know, nothing really led to another thing. It was just kind of all over the place. I didn't think it was a strong enough showing to keep any kind of push going, but it was kind of good enough for him to hang around. He didn't embarrass right. himself. Taker right. gets a solid win. What did you think of the use of Taker here, and do you think Luther held himself respectably?
I think you were going to get about as much out of Luther as you were. Taker was fine. You know that you got your core, you know, Taker fans, Sutton, and, you know, they were going to watch the show for him. So sticking him on here is fine. I mean, whoever he faces, he'll get his pop. I thought Luther was fine. I mean, Taker was still in that mode. It wouldn't be for, in my opinion, at least another couple of years before Taker would start to get back into the groove of facing real athletic, high work rate guys. At this point, Taker was still able to kind of, you know, meander his way through big power guys. He's been dealing with it since he came back. He dealt with it other than Jeff Hardy, even when he was the badass, there wasn't many, you know, small guys he faced, maybe RVD. So he still knew how to respectably make power guys look, you know, halfway decent, even if they're not. So I had no problem with this. It was okay. It was nothing, you know, earth shattering, but to get Taker on the show was fine. He's Taker, you know. I do kind of wish they stretched the, and this is not a knock on Booker, but I wish they'd stretch the Heidenreich feud. I would have been happy if they did a tag here, maybe did a special crossover match and had Taker Kane against Heidenreich and Snitsky. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, but yeah, you know? Why not do that here? We talked about that. I mean, maybe on the books or Mania, we'll talk about it when we get there.
Yep.
They don't do it. Yeah, why not really try and sell this show by doing something like that? I like that. That would have been cool.
Yeah, just a special idea, yeah. special thing, you know, and finish it up. So, yeah. So, but otherwise, it's fine. It's Taker. You can take her on the show. You're gonna get extra buy rate spikes because it's Taker. So, but the match is fine. Nothing. You know, to write home about. But it was fine. Served its purpose. So, before we go to break, and we have two matches left. Why don't we finish off this debacle? One more piece of it.
Let's take a break.
Want to take the break? All right. When we come back, we'll finish off this debacle of a Diva Search, and then two more matches. We'll complete a tournament that JR had alluded to earlier in the show, and then, of course, our main event for the WWE Championship. But first, a lot of Luthas and more words, because
I'll tell you what, baby. I got a great gimmick idea. We'll take Sweet Sapphire. We'll We'll put her all in yellow. We'll put her in a yellow mask, and she'll pretend she lost her Loseleaf's town, but then she comes back, and we'll call the yellow Pog, baby.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile and on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brain Buster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWO-PTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Get ready to bow to the master.
Try and hold me down if you want to. All the garbage I've been through, think I'm scared of you? I'll kill you. Don't got to care in the world of hell with the world. Man like me got
All right, Nation, we are back looking at No Way Out 2005, and we're going to take a moment here to talk about PlaceToBeNation.com. Scott, we missed the 90s return today. And
excellent.
You know, I keep trying to find new tag partners. I keep cycling through one after the other. I think I might have found one that's stuck here.
Okay, Billy Gunn.
Chris Jordan will be my road dog. But, yes, we are here with Wrestling Video Games Part 1. So we did 1990 through probably about like 95-ish. We went through WrestleMania the arcade game. And we stopped before we got to, like, the next-gen series. N64 and PlayStation. We stopped before that. So we covered all the NES and Super Nintendo and Genesis games.
Nice.
So we went back and forth. A lot of fun, a lot of memories, a lot of cool pictures, and I put a lot of videos in this one. So there's videos of the gameplay, videos of the music from the game. So be sure to check that out. It was a really fun piece to do. Got a lot of nice feedback so far. So do yourself a favor, check that out. And lots of other things to check out. Many podcasts dropped over the last 2 days. Between the Sheets, number 8, September 18th to the 14th, 94. Chris Zellner joined by Bix, as always, as well as Charles from Pressing Only and Sean Wheelock from Let's Get It On and Bellator. Looking back at that week in 1994, talking about Jim Cornette breaking car windows, crushing Yokozuna, breaking caskets, and many, many other things. So be sure to check out episode 8 of the phenomenal Between the Sheets podcast. Also, PTBN Rewatch Party, Raw Live Watch, June 28th and 7/5/93. Hosted by, can you believe it, Scott Griscolo? Mm-hmm. After all these years, after all these episodes, all those burgers, all those fries, all those shakes, Steve Willey makes his debut in the hosting chair.
Nice.
Led this edition of the Raw Rewatch Party along with Jordan Duncan, Cowboy Roger Morissette, and Glenn Butler. Of course, that included Lex Luger's slam heard around the world with Yokozuna and some other fun and frivolity. So be sure to check that out. That'll be a regular series with a regular reoccurring mixed up group of people every episode. So
excellent.
New episode of This Week in Wrestling with Steven. Actually, I don't know, Pete, Johnny, looks like all the crew was there for this one. So be sure to check that out each and every Saturday, looking back at the week that was in the world of wrestling. Big congrats out to our buddies Chad and Parv, the 3-year anniversary, episode 75. And they counted down their personal top 100 matches of all time. This is just part one, looking at matches 100 through 51. So they built their own lists, and they went through and talked about what their favorite matches are. So big, a happy anniversary to Chad and Parf. It's been a great 3 years, a phenomenal catalog they put together there. So, Steve Willey paid a remembrance to 9/11 back on Friday, wondering what is really the least we can do. Looked at an effort out there that John Stewart has spearheaded that he pushed along as well. Looking at veterans and the benefits that they should be receiving, it's a bill that was headed to Congress, the Health and Compensation Reauthorization Act of 2015. So be sure to check out that piece. It was really well done, kind of pokes a little fun at the culture that's out there right now on social media about, you know, posting memes and other things. Is that really what we can do, having moments of silence when there's a lot more we can be doing to help honor some of these people that lost their lives back on September 11, 2001. Seinfeld rewatch series continued with The Hamptons, Season 5, Episode 21. Scott, this week we finished Season 5, a tremendous Season 5, arguably, potentially the best season that Seinfeld had to offer. And then we'll move on to Season 6, so we look forward to that. New Hard Traveling Fanboys, counting down the best Justice League episodes, new TJ McAloon show. And, of course, you and I wrapped up 1995 in our Vintage Vault Refresh series, looking at In Your House 5.
Yes.
Royal Rumble 96 will be up this week. So be sure to check out PlaceToBeNation.com. Also, our ebook is up. 1985 through 1993 is Volume 1. You can download that by clicking the banner on the right-hand side. You can download it to your mobile device and read all our reviews, our Vintage Vault Refresh series right there in order in one little comprehensive spot for you to enjoy. So be sure to check that out. Also, the holidays, they're coming fast.
Yes, they are.
I know you all like to shop on Amazon. Why not support Place Domination by clicking the Amazon banner on the right-hand side? Do nothing else. That takes you to Amazon. Then you do everything you would normally do once you get there. And what that does is send a little bit of money back our way to help keep the site up and running. So be sure to stop at PlaceDomination.com on your way to Amazon before doing your holiday shopping this year. And spread that word to your friends and family as well. We appreciate all your support as always. And while you're at it, if you're on iTunes, search Place to Be Podcast. Search PWO-PTBN Podcast. Go in the store and give us a ranking. Vote for us. Leave us some star ratings and give us some comments. It helps us get awareness for our shows. Something we don't ask for enough, but it's a really easy, simple gesture for you listeners out there. If you can just go to iTunes and give us a ranking, you know, accountable to what you think the show deserves or the feed deserves. But we'd appreciate that very much.
Definitely.
So that's it. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation.
All right. Let's head back to the Steel City. No. Last part. Go ahead.
This has me wanting to get dragged up a set of stairs and
throw it off a roof.
Throw it off a building. we get the Divas final bathing suit competition. Tori's out there alone. Dawn refuses after almost getting crippled on the mic when she got slammed by Michelle.
Yes.
Joy's pantering now with a Steelers jersey, but very hot in her bikini. Rachel looked good, but just Rochelle looked good, but just way overacting. Way, way overacting. Super annoying. Lauren Simple Classic looking good as well. Michelle seems to be the crowd favorite. Very fit body, looks good. But Joy is clearly the hottest here. The live crowd seems to pick Michelle, but the internet voted for Joy overwhelmingly. Overwhelming amount. So Joy wins. I thought she was the right choice. She was the best overall. She seemed to get it the most. She had the best look. Big Show special friend that goes a long way in my book, too. So you can't discount that.
Right.
Plus, she'll give you a massage whenever you need it. So.
Precisely.
Again, though, a giant waste of time. I mean, this could have been one segment. You know, we didn't need. Or yeah. Why don't you have the rounds on SmackDown and have, like, the final here with the vote? I don't know. I mean, we didn't need the whole thing here.
I mean, it ate up, like, an hour. Well, maybe not that far. Maybe, what, half an hour, probably?
I mean, I know SmackDown's thin. You couldn't find two other guys to have a match. Split up the Cruiserweight thing and have two Cruiserweight matches. I mean, there had to be someone else you could have used.
Don't bother with the Heat match and just, you know, make that tag match in there. The Holly, Haas, and Suzuki Dupree. I mean, whatever.
Anything. Anything was better than Rochelle telling jokes. I mean, it was just, again, as hot as Joy looked and as great as Tori looked in that dress, the rest was just a complete waste of time. I mean, we don't say that much about these things, but complete waste of time.
And sports update. Erasmo Ramirez's no-hitter has been broken.
Thank God.
Carlos Beltran with a single in the top of the 8th.
Also
games
broken
to score.
Is going to be the hole that I put through my wall. Julio Jones scored another touchdown. But anyways.
All right. Okay, next up, co-main event. You mentioned earlier, JR, about a tournament to determine a number one contender for the WWE Championship to face whoever on April 3rd in Los Angeles. We are at our finals right now.
Always a fan of Little C's.
Yeah, and you know, Rochelle wanted to dance to that, but she couldn't. The song wouldn't keep up with her. So, all right, well, how do we get to these two gentlemen, JR, in the final of this tournament?
Finals of a tournament to determine who will get the world title shot at WrestleMania. In the quarterfinals on January 31st, Rene Dupree and The Undertaker fought to that double countout we mentioned earlier. Booker T defeated Eddie Guerrero. A week later, John Cena knocked off Orlando Jordan, and Kurt Angle defeated Rey Mysterio. And in the semifinals, John Cena beat Booker T, and Kurt Angle received a bye.
Bye,
bye, Birdie. Anything you would have done different in that tournament?
No. No, probably not.
I'll tell you, Susan, it's just like the play Bye, Bye, Birdie.
John, we saw that at the theater.
Cena focused and locked in. Kurt ground Cena off the bell, grinding him down with a headlock. Nice crowd buzz going on. Cena dumps Kurt to the floor, tosses Kurt into the table, looking to brawl. Angle waits for an opening, and then German Cena into the turnbuckles. Angle targeted strikes into submission holds, hooks in a body scissors. Cena comes back with a good clothesline and headbutt and some good near falls. Good story here, too, that it's on Cena to prove himself that he's ready for the next step. That's pretty much what this whole thing is about. Angle narrowly avoids a FU, and Cena slips out of an Angle slam. Angle grabs an ankle lock to a big pop, and Cena kicks free and knocks him to the floor. Cena hits a top rope leg drop as Kurt climbs into the ring. Angle charges. Cena catches him with an FU for a close near fall. Angle goes back to picking apart the ankle and gets cocky. Hits an Angle slam in place of the crowd. Goes back to an ankle lock, and Cena lasts for a while battling. And Angle actually goes to the heel hook here, which normally is irrespectably inescapable. But Cena gets the ropes to break it. So that was kind of a big thing for him to get out of the hole.
He was in for a while, too. Yeah.
Ref gets bumped, and remember, that was Eddie's advice earlier, too. Don't tap, and you'll frustrate Angle. So the ref gets bumped. Angle grabs Cena's chain, which made me laugh, and Cole called it Cena's pride and joy, his chain.
Yes.
That's John Cena's pride and joy. Cena ducks it and hits an FU for the huge win. Really fun match with an aggressive style, a big pop for Cena. Continues his ascension and sets him up for Mania. Angle did a nice job putting him over strongly. Really good psychology and setup throughout. Well built to the end. Match of the night in my eyes. Both guys worked hard. I thought it was the perfect final step in the legitimacy of John Cena before he heads to main event WrestleMania. Did you agree with that? Do you feel like he is ready coming off of this match?
Yes, I do. Good match. It was slow a little bit in the middle, but not too bad. I thought the last few minutes were excellent. Believe it or not, JR, this was the first time in a while that I forgot that I was surprised about something that I thought was going to happen and didn't. I had a weird – I don't know why. When Cena was out and the ref was kind of groggy and Kurt grabbed the chain, I could have sworn Sean was going to come in and super kick him. I don't know why I thought that. Maybe because I was thinking of Goldberg the year before. But I for some reason, I thought I remember Sean coming in and super kicking him, but I guess it didn't happen.
And I'm glad they didn't.
No, I am too. I am too.
Cena needed a clean win. And
yeah, no, you don't see
Angle is really that main event gatekeeper for him to get to the world title match at Mania. Right. But I thought the match was good. I thought both guys worked hard. I thought Cena really worked his ass off and hung with Angle. It was hard hitting. I mean, if I could change one thing, I wouldn't know if I would have had Cena hang as long as he did in the ankle lock, only because I like to protect the ankle lock. I don't like when guys hang too long. We'll talk about that next month. I like when it's a quicker trip in the hold. But otherwise, I enjoyed the match quite a bit. I thought,
yeah, I did too.
And the crowd was into both guys, but they gave Cena a nice pop when he won. And I thought this is probably the most alive they've been since the opener. Was this your match of the night so far?
Yeah, definitely. Cena worked his ass off. And I think you did have a smattering, even though Cole tried to defuse it. You did get a smattering of Kurt cheers during this match. Not as much as you'd see, you know, later in the year, and we'll get there. But you saw a smattering. I know we were in Pittsburgh, but you saw there was a smattering of Kurt cheers, and Taz acknowledged it, and Cole tried to defuse it. But overall, it was a very, very good match, and it was definitely Cena's best match in a while. And not that his matches were bad. How do I word it? Not that this is his best match because his others were bad, but I mean, Kurt's definitely the kind of guy that is going to push you to limits you may not.
He hasn't fought a guy like Kurt. I mean, it's fine to say. I mean, he hasn't had too many matches with a guy like Kurt. You know, Booker's fine, but those matches left a lot to be desired. So definitely his best match since those, it surpasses those easily.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it was a fun match, and I enjoyed it. It was definitely seen as best to date, and Kurt made him look like $1 million. Yeah. So, and that'll continue.
So we've watched, you know, we've watched all of the Cena build since he debuted. Do you feel at this point they're making the right call as they head into Mania with him as a top guy? Now, we're not talking about whether or not he went, you know, any of that. Just heading into Mania, does he feel like the guy that is ready to ascend and be there?
Yes. Yeah. This match did it for me. I got to be honest with you. At the end of 04... 50-50, leaning slightly up.
So one match did it to make him your franchise guy at Mania?
The Rumble did. Because there were so many names at the Rumble that you could have put in his place. Could have put Eddie back in the spot.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Do you feel that he is over enough and ready enough for it? So beyond him winning the Rumble, I mean, that's booking. But do you feel at this point, watching how he's developed and what he's done, and who he is and what he brings to the table, is he ready for what they're about to give him? So, you know, obviously, yes, he won the Rumble, and that was a big moment. But
they chose
won it. They chose him to be there. So, I mean, just him, looking at him, and trying to block out what we know, what he becomes.
Right.
Was he ready at this point, or do you think they could have held off? Like, were they forced into it? Did they have to do this now? Could they have held off a little bit
longer?
Well, was he ready? I mean, like, you know.
Well, you're kind of asking two different questions here. Is he ready, and could they have waited, or two different questions?
No, it's the same question, because is he so ready that they have to do it? Like, is he ready? Or could they have held off and let him become more ready? Like, they're not forced to do this. Like, they have Batista there. Like, Batista is ready. And
yes,
they would have been stupid to wait. John Cena, could they have waited? Or did they do it? I guess we could say this for Mania. Maybe we'll leave 2 weeks to build to the answer. But did they do it just to have the guy ascend at WrestleMania? Is that why they did it? Or did they do it because they couldn't wait any longer? Was it time? I guess that's the question. So maybe think about it for 2 weeks. We'll come back and we'll talk about it.
That was the longest essay question for the next class in a while.
Well, I think it's a cool one.
Great question.
I think it's a cool one to talk about. Because it's important because I think we have a tale of two cities here. We have Batista that is red hot. Mm-hmm. The crowd is super into him. The Triple H story is nearing its like that is meant to be if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
This, we'll talk about where they go, But did it have to happen here, or did it happen because they wanted to have the moment at Mania? Like, did they have to pull the trigger on John Cena here is my question. Could it have been someone else, or just JBL keeps it?
Mm. Oh, okay. Now you've clarified the question for me.
Well, no, it's still both. So, what I mean, there's two steps. You could have either still had the match and had JBL win.
Right.
Or put someone else in the match and have JBL win, or have JBL lose to someone else. So, I mean, three options that are not Cena. Right. So Cena either loses at Mania or gets screwed, or we have someone completely different in the spot. Eddie, Angle, whoever. You know what I mean? Someone other than Cena. Were they forced to do this at this point? Did they have no choice, but the crowd is beating down the doors. You know, Austin at 14, Batista now, you know, Shawn Michaels in 90. Like, we had to do it.
Right. Okay.
So, take that back. 2 weeks' time, WrestleMania 21, we'll talk about it.
All right.
If I don't forget.
I'll write it down.
A good chance.
It's time to put some post-its on the screen. So, yeah, that's fine. All right. So, but John Cena is your number one contender for the WWE Championship. But the question still is, will he have that slot to himself, or will he have to share it on April 3rd in Los Angeles? And who will he be facing? Because we have now reached our main event. The WWE champion. And at this point, JR, and I remember you and I were, in fact, you and I were watching this live in the NBA Master Control Room. We were watching this. You and I were full blown on the JBL bandwagon at this point. We were both digging him big time. And, you know, because he finally had a full blown stable, which.
I'll give you a full blown stable.
Thought you had the night off. And he takes on the last guy that he hasn't. The last guy on the show that he hasn't faced yet in a title match.
Yeah, he's run through them all.
He's run through them all.
Which
How
is
do we
cool.
Get
I mean, it's a cool way to build
them. Yes. How do we get here?
JBL, not a fan of this match. He let GM Teddy Long know about it immediately on February 3rd. That night, Big Show ran through the Bashams in a handicap match to gain some momentum. A week later, JBL hatched a plan where he would shoot Big Show with a tranquilizer gun so he could beat him down without retaliation. Before the plan could unfold, A.B. Weber accidentally shot JBL with a gun. Later in the night, JBL came out drunkenly arguing with an inflatable dinosaur, comparing it to Big Show, stripping down, whipping it with his belt. Big Show came out to confront him, but JBL quickly gained his senses and cracked JBL with a clothesline, revealing the dart incident was a ruse. And, of course, that all happened in Japan on those shows. And it was one of the more memorable moments of JBL's title run.
Yes.
Show was able to recover, wiped out the Bashams in Orlando, Jordan, as JBL escaped. The next week on Raw, JBL's limo almost ran down Batista in the garage, and Batista vowed to show up on SmackDown for revenge. On February 17th, JBL frantically told Teddy he was not behind the vehicular attack on JBL because he was not that dumb. On Batista, rather.
Batista.
Teddy didn't believe him and said Batista would be at No Way Out to sign a SmackDown contract to face JBL at WrestleMania. Later in the night, Batista arrived and took a baseball bat to the limo, totally destroying it, looking like a badass in his dapper suit. As the Bashams and OJ went to stop him, Show jumped JBL in the ring. The cabinet returned and JBL hit a low blow. Before they could do much damage, Batista evened the odds, and the show ended with Batista and Show standing in the ring, staring at JBL. And of course, this is a barbed wire cage match, and there were rumors heading in that the Pennsylvania Athletic Commission would not permit a barbed wire cage match, but in the end, the match went on as scheduled. One explanation floated was that the commission only barred legit barbed wire, and WWE used the gimmicked version.
Yes.
So, what did you think of adding Batista into the mix?
Well, it was more suited for Raw. I mean, it was obviously you're executing this. This really, SmackDown was just the, I don't want to say collateral damage. What's the opposite of that? They were just the recipient of an added wrinkle in the storyline, but it was more suited, obviously.
They did it because they wanted to eat up this month before driving hard to Mania. Like, I think they didn't want to announce the Mania main event too soon, and they did this to tease for a while to sell this show, you know, and then go hard to Mania. But go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I think most of it truly was they were, you know, getting the Raw storyline portion of it going. And to legitimize the Raw storyline, they had to have him. They had him actually show up on SmackDown and supposedly show up tonight here in Pittsburgh. So, it's Batista. I was full on Batista fan, so I was fine with it. But it added some intrigue. Sure, it needed it. But again, it was, you know, SmackDown was just the recipient. It was mostly to ignite the Raw half of the storyline, which we'll get into more in 2 weeks.
All right. So but a pretty hyped match with a good build. And it actually felt like a really big challenge and a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about this a lot, but the fact that it's Big Show is what ruins a lot of it. And not because of his work, just because of his value of what he is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like they did a really good job building this up. And a good selling point, too, at the debut of the barbed wire cage. It made perfect sense with the cabinet. And they throw Batista in there as well because they needed to add intrigue on some level to this. Because it's fairly obvious that Big Show's not going to win. I mean, right. it's like 99% obvious that Big Show's not going to win the title here and head to Mania as champion. So they're throwing as much at you to at least make you want to see the match as they can. So they throw in this never-seen-before barbed wire stip. They throw in... they know that you're probably going to watch and know... If you're debating on ordering, you're pretty confident JBL's going to win. So they're saying, look, we know JBL. We know you know JBL's going to win. We want you to buy it to see if Batista will choose SmackDown or Raw. Like, that was their... We want to give you some
right.
intrigue on some level. Here it is.
Right.
To me, that's why they did what they did. And that's why I'm okay with it, because they needed to add something to this match. So, major question here, again, whether they could deliver with all the gimmicks in place. Big Show punches right off the bell. JBL blocks the cage grating but gets chopped down. Show catches JBL and spikes him down, continues to dominate with right hands and chops. JBL runs Show into the steel post that holds the cage together to turn the momentum. Show's busted open right away. JBL tries to escape, but he can't because he doesn't want to chance the wire. JBL chokes away, and Show's a streaming blood here. Show comes back and hoists JBL up, slams him face first into the steel beam, snaps him down with a powerbomb. JBL's busted open now as well. The cabinet comes out with bolt cutters. Teddy comes out and stops them. OJ slips the cutters into the cage before he leaves, and then JBL pace Big Show with the cutters and hits a clothesline from hell for a near fall. Big Show blocks a second clothesline from hell, hits a chokeslam for a near fall. JBL climbs with the cutters and tries to hack through the wire. Big Show catches him, and the cutters fall to the floor. JBL rams him into the wire, continues to tear into the wound. Lots of blood. Big Show chokeslams JBL off the top, and the ring mat collapses. The crowd gets all fired up with a holy shit chant. Big Show takes his time. He safely climbs down and eventually breaks the lock and chain off the door. But by the time he reaches the floor, the bell rings because a super bloody JBL had crawled under the torn mat that he got thrown through and sneaks to the floor. I thought this was an ingenious finish. I thought it was fantastic camera work. They hit it, and we don't even realize it until the bell rings when Show reaches the floor because he stops to pose. So you kind of just assume they're ringing it for him because he stops on that last step and poses. I thought it was a nice tease. We get a lot of some confusion, but you don't get a dusty finish. It's not super convoluted. It's easily explainable, but you get that minute of wait, what? Show beats up JBL. The cabinet makes a save. Batista comes out and cleans house to end the show on a happy note. Karagu is a mega pop for Batista. They were psyched to see him. Cena comes out and chucks JBL into a table full of equipment and then spinebusters him through a set of steel supporters. Cole bets on a WrestleMania 21 triple threat main event to close the show, saying Batista looks like he's chosen SmackDown, not Raw. Nice tease for potential WrestleMania main event to close the show. They did what they needed to do, a lot of brawling, interference, gimmicks, lots of blood, lots of punches, and I thought this was better than expected due to the hard work. Nothing great, but definitely a solid main event. The crowd was engaged despite the clear and obvious outcome. It was a really fun finish and a perfect JBL booking to send him to Mania, where he looks strong but not overpowering. So he looks smart. He doesn't look like a dope. He's not a pussy. You know, he escapes with an ingenious finish. And like I said from the start, if this was anybody but Big Show, we have a lot more anticipation here. Like, if this exact match and Angle had gone down with Angle instead of Show, I think we're looking at things a whole lot different. Do you agree with that on any level?
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, I agree with your comments earlier about Big Show. Yeah, I do. I agree. I think the booking at the end with the JBL falling through did add an incredible visual, and I was surprised because I didn't think they could come up with a better way to end that match without them using what they've already used so far to this point. And I thought that was pretty great. I mean, that was probably a better slam to the Matt than when Mick fell from the cell at No Way Out 2000, which looked totally like cushiony, like on a couch.
Right. Oh yeah,
this one looked awesome. I mean, the thing ripped and it was pretty great.
No, it was a great finish. I mean, or even say if it would have been Undertaker in this. So let's see, because that's more of a better angle, doesn't have this type of match. Let's do Undertaker.
Okay.
I mean, that's kind of believable that maybe Taker could win here, right?
Yes.
And go to Mania as champion. So yep. Let's put that in play.
Okay.
I think if this whole feud match angle aftermath goes down with Taker instead of Big Show, it's like way more fondly remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kill each other, lots of blood, lots of gimmicks. They do a great fake tease out at the end. Like, just a lot of really cool stuff. And I feel like if Taker had been there, it would have been just believable enough that the crowd a bit more. As is, it's really hard to think that Big Show had any chance to do, you know, make it to Mania's champion.
Right. No, absolutely.
And I think that's why they did the Batista and Cena stuff, to at least give the crowd something at the end to lash your teeth into.
The only funny thing was Batista was supposed to show up. He had like his dressing room and, you know, the crew de tape platter and everything, and he comes out in his tights.
I know, yeah, it was funny. It was
very strange. And I was like those alternate white and red.
But I like them being, I mean, they were trying, God bless them. I mean, no one actually believed we were going to have the triple threat.
Right.
But, you know, the story was enough, was there. With
sure.
The whole thing with Evolution was that Triple H wanted Batista to go to SmackDown, win the title there, so Evolution can dominate. That was the whole storyline. Mm-hmm. So they did just enough to make you think that it could be headed that way. And then they swerve it, and they have, obviously, they don't go that way, but I thought they teased it well here. To me, the final, like, hour or so kind of salvages the show, because it was bad before. I mean, it was
really bad.
I mean, when your best match, in my eyes, was probably, like, Booker and Heidenreich.
Heidenreich, yeah.
The Divas stuff was awful. Not a lot of interest. You just want to get to Mania, but the last two matches, to me at least, made this click a little bit. And
yeah.
Cena was very good, and the main event was a lot of fun. And again, in a vacuum, like, looking back, when it doesn't matter who's going to win, like, you already know the winner and the outcome, just as a match, like, it was enjoyable. At the time, it lost a little bit of luster because you didn't think Big Show had a chance to win. But in a vacuum, when the outcome doesn't matter as much, I enjoy it.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put it. And the, you know, that they were pimping the whole camera thing, Batista, Cena, Batista, Cena, Batista, Cena, Batista, Cena, like, back and forth for like the last 25 seconds. You started to get in your mind, wait a minute, showing this a lot. Maybe Triple H will fight Shawn or something. Interesting. Benoit gets a rematch. Who knows? Yeah, I was definitely, surprised when I watched it today that I enjoyed the last, like, you know, 45 minutes of the show than I did. But I was getting kind of sad because I really was. It took us a while. But I really was enjoying JBL as champion. I thought he was a fine face of SmackDown as, like, the top heel. I was a little bummed knowing what was probably on the horizon, you know, in
right.
6 weeks. But
and he's peaking here. I mean,
he really is.
And everyone really
sucks.
I feel like anyone who was holding out, and we bought in a little bit earlier, but anyone that was holding out finally bought in with the Japan, with the Godzilla stuff. And then,
yeah.
You know,
so great.
This is the first match
so
you can
great.
Say. I mean, he's been a good part of the matches he's been in, but to me, this is the first match you can say, like, I think JBL made this match good. And Big
yep.
Show worked hard, but to me, this is the first time, like, JBL felt like, as champion, he carried the match.
Yep. I concur. Yeah, definitely. So JBL, once again, retains the WWE Championship in a decent enough match for Cage. And for those that are wondering, they said the first ever barbed wire steel cage match. Maybe it's WWE's first ever barbed wire steel cage match in the WWE, but this was not the first barbed wire steel cage match on pay-per-view. Do you remember the first one, JR?
The first barbed wire match on pay-per-view?
Mm-hmm.
In WWE?
Mm-hmm. No, on pay-per-view, period.
Oh,
amongst all promotions.
ECW?
That was not a cage match. The barbed wire match you're thinking of is one of my favorites, period, and that's the one between Sabu and Terry Funk where Sabu wins the title and he's picking barbs out of his fucking crotch. But the first barbed wire steel cage match, which I don't know if you can compare it to this one, Uncensored 99.
Oh, that's right.
Hogan and Flair, when that was the kind of the pseudo double turn, right? And Hogan had blew his knee out and left for a while, and they came back in the red and yellow and all that shit. So, anyway, so there you go. There's no way out of 5. You're not really missing much. If you want to go to the network and check it out, just watch the last 2 matches. I think you'll be fine. Because for the Cena junkies, maybe the newer Cena junkies that are younger fans that may not remember this far back, maybe they just became fans like in the last 5 years or so, maybe this is a match you want to check out. Because this might have been Cena's first, I mean, besides WrestleMania 20 against Big Show for the U.S. title, this might have been Cena's real first showcase match. Real showcase match against a real top flight competitor. And might be surprised what you see.
Yep.
And then the main events, you know, the main event. So there it is. We are officially now, JR, 6 weeks away in timeline, not in real life. 6 weeks away when we converge April 3rd. In Los Angeles, and I don't think they've announced Hall of Fames yet, right? Maybe the next night. That Raw 221.
Yeah, is that the one in Providence?
I think so.
That's
we were having this discussion in our chat like Friday, I think, right?
I think that's the one where they started the first name.
Yeah, and
it would make sense. They really seemed that year to hold off on the big Mania push until the show was out of the way.
Yeah.
I think because they knew they had 6 weeks, they don't want to peek on it.
Right, and then you had we were pumped to see what the class was going to be, and this was the first year that they really do the real headline guy.
Right.
So, but we'll talk about the Hall of Fame in 2 weeks. So, there you go. There's no way out. 2005.
All right, so that'll do it for us. So we'll be back in a couple weeks. WrestleMania 21. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, we have a bunch of stuff coming for you this week. We have a new Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast with myself, Will, and Dan McGinn. New installment in the main event. What do you got cooking there?
We've got, how about this for a panel? Steve Willey, Jason Greenhouse, and the Godfather, Nate Milton.
All right.
Joining us for main event this week. And we're going to have a kind of changing up the format, the formatics of the show. Obviously, we're going to preview United Champions, but a couple of new things, new wrinkles in the show that will be permanent from here on out. So I'm looking forward to everyone listening to it. So,
okay.
So that's this week on main event. So.
And then we got new Kevin Kelly will be next week. We're working on big guests. We'll see if it happens. New Sports Evolution. All the kinds of stuff for you. PlayStation.com. Be sure to check it all out. So, Scott, we're done. We'll talk in 2 weeks' time. WrestleMania 21. Until then, everyone, take care.
Doug and Danny.
It's sad. I'm going to miss the song.
Exactly.
I miss talking King of Queens. We'll have to find a new sitcom.
Yeah, I'll have to find. Yes. Something else with Ben Stiller in it, or Jerry, or some Stiller. Ramira. My possessions are causing me suspicion, but there's no one.